We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Feel like Kobe in the fourth quarter.
This is the Dane Moore NBA podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast, coming at you Saturday morning, bright and early. Some additional news on the Tim Connelly pursuit by the Minnesota Timberwolves came out from Adrian Wojnarowski this morning. And I'm joined by Adam Mares of DNVR Sports, who I talked to earlier this week, who covers the Denver Nuggets. Adam, when we talked, I made you promise that if this went down, that you would come on the show and discuss who Tim is and all those things. And you said, well, you just want me to come on for 30 minutes and cry. Are you at the point of crying? I mean, I know you love Tim.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is, you know, just to kind of give you the Denver perspective, just weeks ago, and it was obvious, it had been obvious for months, but just weeks ago in the exit interviews, everybody in the organization came out and said, hey, this is the biggest summer of the Jokic era. This is the moment where everything has to come together. We're locked in. We got a lot of big decisions to make. We got to maximize, because losing Jamal Murray for 2 years kind of shortened that title window that they have. This is like, hey, you got to go all in.
Right.
So to now do that without the guy who was the architect of this from the very beginning. And by the way, all of this stuff starts coming down 5 weeks from now, the draft, the free agency, trade season, all of that is, it's just absolutely insane. Tim has been, done a great job of building the culture and doing everything here. So the idea of him leaving and leaving under terms that are another organization just valued him more and is willing to pay more. It's dark days here in Denver.
Adam, we should say that none of this is final yet. Again, we're recording this Saturday morning. It does appear that the writing is on the wall with this. It would be a very Timberwolvesy sort of whoops if it didn't go through. That's my assumption, though, at this time. I'm kind of curious from the Denver perspective, because I've talked to, you know, some people around the league who have said there's kind of some frustration around the league and in other in other front offices that an ownership group like this is kind of setting a new precedent for trying to get one of these, a president of basketball operations. And, you know, nothing's official on offering an ownership stake, but everything I've heard is this offer is astronomical and Tim would, quote unquote, be insane to not take it. But this whole ownership stake thing here, I think if the Connelly deal does go down, there will be sort of some fallout with that, particularly with these new Timberwolves owners of like, hey, like we're all in this together as 30 owners. Like you kind of gotta, you know, play by the rules. And they're not playing by the rules. But I'm just curious. Like, have you thought about that? Is there frustration that this, it's not cheating, but feels like it from a Nuggets perspective?
It's funny, man. I love that point. I hadn't really thought about it, to be honest, because I'm just thinking about what it means for Denver in terms of, you know, obviously this summer, which as I mentioned, is so big. But you're right. Anytime there's a new ownership group and they do anything outside of the ordinary, you have to imagine the other owners look around and they say, hey, man, like what's going on here? Why is this a thing? I was reading Ethan Strauss's article the other day just to kind of show you how NBA ownership and pro sports ownership in general is a good old boys club where everybody's kind of like, hey, we have a good thing going here. Nobody rocked the boat. And they were talking about how with Robert Sarver, the NBA is in a difficult spot because, hey, there might be a smoking gun here, but the NBA, like, ownership in sports is a safe haven. Like, hey, you get to do what you want. This is why our teams are worth so much, because people are willing to buy them because you're kind of free from, hey, nobody's really looking at you. You get to kind of do what you want. It's like a fun thing. And if you punish Sarver, then all the other owners are like, hey, are you going to punish me too for all of my bad deeds? And it drives down prices. The same, I think there's something similar, less heavy, I guess you could say, but there's something similar here too. You start offering ownership even one time, the next great GM is going to say, hey, I want ownership too. I want a little stake here. And there's definitely a vulnerability there. So that's really an interesting, I hadn't thought about it, but it makes a lot of sense. And I am certain there are owners, probably one here in Denver, that's like, hey man, you're breaking the rules here. You're putting us in a bad spot.
It kind of reminds me of the like president of basketball operations and coach thing. Remember how there was that kind of like bubble for 10 years where that was a thing. And then we're like, wait, that's not a great idea. This is too much power being given. But just to get to Tim, obviously, you have a personal relationship with him covering the team for as long as you have. But I also know, you know, you're a big believer in his style of team building and the way he's put it together. So if you could kind of summarize in a way how Tim Connelly has gone about building the Nuggets over the last 8 years, what would you say?
Well, this is what's funny. And we were just before we went live, I said, I think this is a bigger loss for Denver than it is a gain for Minnesota. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is what he's done in Denver, he's had some real pluses and some real minuses, to be honest, on his record. The first thing is Tim Connelly has had a very small front office. And I think a lot of this is out of necessity. The Kroenkes just aren't the team that's going to build out a 20-person analytics department and, you know, have 20 scouts in 20 different markets. They're just not going to do that. They're going to have a little bit of a skeleton crew, and they're, you know, out of necessity. But I've talked to Tim about this before, and he actually thinks it's a positive thing to have fewer decision makers. If there was a word to describe the way Tim Connelly has run the Denver Nuggets since he's been here, it would be family. They've got a very small group that really trusts each other, that can, you know, that can be confrontational and disagree with each other because it's so small and so tight knit. Nothing ever leaks from the organization. Their moves, they're very cohesive. They can set a culture and they don't have to worry about are 30 different people executing this culture. It's just a very small group. So he's been a phenomenal scout. If you look at the draft, he has absolutely nailed the draft every single year except for one, the Donovan Mitchell trade year. He ended up trading back. They were trying to get OG Anunoby. They just miscalculated. He went one pick ahead of where they went.
Right.
They got stuck with Tyler Lydon, who wasn't a very good player. So 1 year they kind of screwed up. Although in that same year, in the second round, they drafted Monte Morris, who started every game for him this season as a second rounder. And he's a point guard now going on, I think, his sixth season. So he's just been phenomenal at the draft, and not just the draft. He's been phenomenal at finding guys from the G League, from Europe, from Australia, from other teams' end of bench. He just has this knack for identifying, hey, that guy that's not getting minutes, we liked him at the draft. I think this is a bad situation. Let's find him and bring him in. If you went through the players that are currently in the NBA that Tim Connelly had some hand in identifying, I am certain it would outperform any other general manager over that time. Just down the line, you find Kenrich Williams and Jayson Tate. You know, you got Davis in Sacramento. There's just so many guys that weren't in the league that he brought in through the Nugget system, ended up being too good and then going to other teams because Denver just had too many of those types of prospects.
What do you think makes him that way? Why is he able to be such a good scout? Because, you know, there's 30 GMs, Pobos around the league who are all trying to do this. It's like, we always talk about this with like Masai too, with what Toronto's done, and also, you know, Miami now too, with kind of those, the scrap heap guys, right? That kind of turn into something. Like, is it something about who Tim is?
It's a great question. I really don't know if I have a great answer to that one. What makes a guy good at his job? I mean, first it has to just be the skill, the ability to sort of identify the talent here or there, but you know, I don't know. Denver has made a big deal in this Jokic era of bringing in character guys. And when I say that, I don't necessarily mean the same type of character, but I think, you know, guys that love basketball have just been such a huge priority. And I do think there's probably something to ownership groups and front offices that meddle too much in the hey, this guy has a lot of flags, but if we can just save him, like if we could just get the most out of him. And I think Conley, one of the MOs to him is like, first and foremost, you have guys that genuinely love basketball and are going to work. And then on top of that, just have the you know, he's found a lot of guys that very quickly you realize, oh, these guys have like a lot of skill. They really know the game. They really have a lot of different things they can do. And they weren't pegged as that. They were pegged as a shooter. Bones Highland this year is a great example. He's a shooter. He's a gunner. You get him out. You actually get into the film. That's what he was in college in the circumstance he was. But you start to get him into another environment. He comes to Denver. He starts playing point guard. He starts facilitating. So I think he just identifies the important things and probably cuts out some of the things that can distract a front office. That'd be the best I could kind of speculate on that.
No, that makes sense. I was just kind of thinking about how when we talked on the phone the other night, and prior to that conversation, I obviously knew who Tim Conley was as the president of basketball operations and, you know, some of the moves. But when we were talking, I didn't know about his background, and he told me he's from Baltimore. What was kind of his path to getting this job in 2013 when he took over for Masai?
Well, he comes from a basketball family. He's got three brothers. All of them are in and around the NBA, have been training different players, you know. So he grew up just a basketball junkie and has been kind of an NBA lifer, going from different scout jobs and lower level front office jobs before getting to Denver. So he's a bit of a lifer here, but he's a true basketball purist. I mean, you know, Baltimore's a basketball city. A lot of great basketball comes out of the DMV area. And he's just one of those guys that I think is he likes basketball distilled down to its purest form. And that might, honestly, when you ask about how he becomes such a good scout, it might be part of that. I think there is value in any field when you can get through your thought process the simplest. And I think that's how he is with everything. There's not a whole lot of like layers and things. It's, he can distill things down to its simplest form and make decisions that way. That's just how I describe him.
Right. That's interesting. Let me mix in a quick break here, Adam, and then I want to ask you a little bit about his some of the transactions he's made over the years. Today's show is sponsored by Aura. You know of Aura because you've seen their name on the Timberwolves jerseys, and I'd like to tell you what Aura's digital security can do for you. Aura is identity theft protection, fraud monitoring, a VPN, password management, and antivirus software, all combined into one easy-to-use app. People are shocked when their identity is stolen, but identity theft is actually extremely common. There's a new victim of identity theft every 14 seconds. Aura monitors the dark web for your emails, passwords, and social security numbers and sends alerts fast right to your phone and email. When it comes to fraud, every second matters. You can connect your credit and bank accounts and get notified of any changes up to 4 times faster than Aura's competitors with Aura. I've already signed up for Aura, and I'm already seeing how often my personal information is showing up on the dark web, and you will too, if you sign up for a free 14-day trial with Aura. Protect yourself from America's fastest growing crime by trying 14 days for free at aura.com/Dane. That's aura.com/DANE for 14 days free. And a thank you to Aura for sponsoring today's show. Aura, digital security you can trust.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, we are back with Adam Marez of DNVR Sports. He's covered the Nugget. Adam, how long have you covered the Nuggets for?
This will be my eighth season next year.
So literally the entire Tim Connelly era.
He came over actually in 2013. I think I arrived in 2014. So he was there 1 year before. Okay. But really, the era began in earnest in 2014 when he drafted Gary Harris, Yusuf Nurkic, and Nikola Jokic in the same draft. Which, by the way, 16, 19, and 41. You get Yusuf Nurkic, a starting center, is very good. You get Jokic, two-time MVP, and you get Gary Harris, who's had a very good run. That's a hell of a draft for having zero lottery picks.
Well, I don't know, man. He passed on Jokic twice there.
Right.
What is the difference in him as a scout in the draft versus the way he's built the roster out with trades? I guess free agency probably falls more into the draft one, right? That's just kind of identifying it. But it does seem like a bit of a different skill set to be able to effectively facilitate a trade and the financials that sort of come with all of that. How would you distinguish those two things?
Yeah, so I would almost put there's four areas here that you kind of evaluate, maybe five. Like culture, he gets an A+. I honestly believe that he has built this culture where he's a rare example. You hear sometimes of general managers that don't communicate with players or like, hey, I try to keep my distance. He's the type of guy to have guys over to his house. You know, like he breaks that wall completely. And I think there's positives and negatives to that. But like he's very close to everybody in the organization. And again, it's not that he hasn't traded good players away or this or that. It's just I think he just believes in like, hey, let's cut through the BS. We know what this is. It's a business. All right, we're over that. Let's hang out. Let's know each other. And that'll help. So the culture part, I think he gets A+, the draft A+. And then I would say there's these low level trades. What I mean is you traded Aaron Aflalo for Will Barton. Aaron Aflalo was the better player at the time. Will Barton was a guy that wasn't playing in Portland. He finds him and it's like, okay, that's a great end of bench guy. You must have had some intel on and that worked out. He's found the Torrey Craigs, as I mentioned, the Kenrich Williamses, all these guys that ended up being really good, either undrafted players or have just been like on the dumpster pile. PJ Dozier, he found him. He's a guy that bounced around. He actually ended up being a very big impact piece for Denver before he got hurt this year. So he gets an A on those. So those three things, he gets an A. Where he struggles, two things. One, signing guys. He's signed almost everybody early. You know, and some of these guys are easy. Jokic, no question. All right, sign him early. He's a great player. Like that was identified that one easy. Jamal Murray, I remember he gave him the max 1 year early. He could have entered his final season and then become a restricted free agent. You had no risk of losing him at that point. But he gave him the max contract early. And I remember at the time thinking, Murray hasn't proven to be a max guy. Like, we're not sure that's the case.
We call that the Andrew Wiggins around here. Yeah.
Wiggins, and you worry about that. And then Jamal Murray went on to have the bubble run and reach that level. And I think everybody knows, okay, that's a max player. So he was right there. Michael Porter, all the back injuries, gave him the max early. That one, I think, is one that you look at in Denver, you think that's probably going to backfire. He ended up missing this entire season. And now he starts a max where he's played fewer than 50% of his games. Mason Plumlee was a free agent. I think he got $13 million when he was a free agent. He has a tendency, I think, to pay early and maybe even overpay guys. That's kind of been his MO. And then lastly, the big trade moves. You know, we haven't seen him successfully execute one. The biggest trade that you can look at that he's made, Nurkic became disgruntled. Jokic had surpassed him. This was several years back. Tim Connelly traded away Yusuf Nurkic and a first-round pick to get in Mason Plumlee. Nurkic the better of the two players, including a first-round pick is tough. And at the time, you know, that trade was difficult because Nurkic wasn't playing. He was disgruntled. Everybody knew this, so there was no leverage. But we've seen different GMs turn that negative leverage into positive leverage in a way that Tim Connelly just hasn't proven.
Interesting. And then what about the Aaron Gordon deal? I mean, that's probably the next biggest deal.
That actually is a bigger trade, I would say. And that one, I think you look at and say that one's a positive trade for Denver. You get rid of Gary Harris, who at the time wasn't playing very well. He ended up going to Orlando, not really being an impact player there. His time had kind of expired. You get rid of RJ Hampton, who was playing really well for Denver as a young player, and you thought, oh my God, you're getting rid of a young player. He went to Orlando, and now we're a year and a half removed. It's like, yeah, that's just a regular mid-20s pick. Like, he's not anything special. So that, and then you include a first-round pick. To me, that's good value for Aaron Gordon, who's made an impact, a huge impact on Denver. So I think that one was a positive one for sure. The other trades I think of, and these I guess could qualify more as the low-level ones, but another characteristic of his that I think is probably accurate. Malik Beasley, Jared Vanderbilt, Juancho Hernangómez. It was clear to me a year prior to when they were traded that those guys didn't have a role in Denver. Not that they weren't good, but that Denver just was.
Sure.
He had done too good of a job in the draft that you had these like redundancies on the roster. And I think there was a time you could have traded Malik Beasley alone for a lot more than what they got out of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But again, I think one of his MOs is probably holding on to his guys a little bit too long. And that was an example of it. They ended up trading him away for practically nothing. And that's another one of his MOs.
What role do you think Tim Connelly plays in determining the style of play that Mike Malone put into place? And Ab, we've talked before about how, I mean, Chris Finch talked more importantly about how he tried to this season emulate a lot, at least defensively, I mean, probably offensively too, with what Jokic has done in Denver and what they wanted to do with Carl. I mean, I kind of think about that and then the Aaron Gordon sort of thing. And you see Tim Connelly really prioritize that sort of combo forward who can play, can really play the back end of that more aggressive sort of defensive scheme, or just kind of be that athlete who can both defend on the perimeter, you know, and also be physical enough to rebound a little bit. I mean, do you think there's a specific way Tim Connelly envisions playing, or is he more of a like, you just go do your thing guy?
I think so. First of all, with regards to what you're talking about with the defensive scheme, I honestly think this is more simple than people let on. There's two ways to play defense in the NBA right now. There's switch everything. And then if you have a big that you can't do, a la Jokic, a la Towns, then you have to be able to play this aggressive scheme where you play up top and you rotate behind them. Like if those guys can't protect the paint in a drop scheme, then you have to have these very mobile wings behind a lot of length, and you have to cover a lot of ground. There's not a lot of differentiation. Like the NBA has been solved. You know, like five out basketball, we're seeing the Dallas Mavericks, who aren't necessarily great. They have one great player. It's like, hey, yeah, but if you play five out, we're kind of impossible to guard. So we'll see where the chips fall. So to me, but to your question about this Tim Connelly affect a coaching staff, I think 0%. And I think this is another one of the Tim Connelly traits, is that he's going to pick ingredients. He's going to want to have a great relationship with the coach. I think that's the most important thing. Like, hey, can we sit down and have big picture talks? But he's not a guy that after two straight losses is going to come down and say, hey, you need to play this guy or do this thing. Like, I think he steps back, looks big picture, and then meets with the people to trust them to do their job. That being said, we talked about this, and this is one of the more interesting things. Tim Connelly and Michael Malone are kind of opposites in a way that I think at its best works. Tim Connelly, a freewheeling, light, extremely personable guy, not a suit and tie type of guy, although he obviously does. I mean, executives have to be suit and tie types of guys, but I think his natural state is more of a relaxed person, casual person.
Right.
Michael Malone, incredibly principled, intense, fierce, traditional. And so I think the tension between those two philosophies at its best works really perfectly, creates a nice synergy. Chris Finch is sort of the Tim Connelly of coaches. I think they have very similar personalities. Very open-minded, very willing to experiment, very relaxed, very much a, hey, let's not overcomplicate this. We kind of get how this works. And I'm so curious to see how it works. Tim Connelly brought in Isaiah Hartenstein 2 years ago or last year. I thought he was great for Denver. Didn't really get a chance because Michael Malone didn't, you know, he was too young. He was too late. He's a kind of a weird player. They end up losing him. I think he's going to be a starter for the Clippers next year. He's a very good player. I look at that and I think Malone is a traditional coach. He's serious. He's intense. I'm not surprised he didn't take this cast-off player and play right. him right out of the gate. I'm not surprised by that. Chris Finch would. I really believe he was here in Denver. Chris Finch, I think, is the architect of the Jokic ball as much as just about anyone outside of Jokic. So I think that that synergy, Tim Conley finds really good value, but sometimes it's weird. And I think Chris Finch can like see the value in the weirdness and
like
get
that.
The most out of it.
Yeah. I mean, from talking to you and having gotten to know Chris, I mean, Chris Finch is the most normal guy coach in the NBA. I think that's just, and again, it's not like it's a good or bad thing. I mean, I'm sure Michael Malone's like rigidity has got him a lot of things in his life too. It's just different,
totally
different types of personality archetypes. And as I've heard more and more about Tim Connelly, and when people like describe street smartness and all these, I'm like, yeah, this sounds like you are describing the executive version of Chris Finch. And I would think that like similarities, alignment, as they like to say here in Minnesota, would be a good thing there. I don't know if like it's important to sort of challenge each other with like different perspectives on that, which kind of leads me to what do you think he needs in the front office around him? Like he's probably not going to be able to bring the whole Denver gang.
Right.
I'm pretty skeptical that Gupta will stay along in that sort of role, even though I think Conley would probably want him to, or will ask him to. I don't know anything, you know, for sure on that front. But if we say that Tim Conley and Chris Finch are the two most important people in the organization and they have the exact same personality, like what else do they need? And what do you think Tim will try and bring with him?
So I'm such a believer in this for both coaches and front office that often like a coach's number one job is to set the philosophy, to be a leader, to kind of like read the room and adjust as goes. And then you could have great assistants that specialize in some of the more X's and O's. Now, I think Chris Finch is an X's and O's genius, especially on the offensive end. I think he's very smart on that regard. So maybe he takes on a little bit of that. He could probably use a Ron Adams type assistant that's like, hey, I'm focused on this thing and you lead, but I'm going to be the guy behind the scenes. I think a front office person can be much the same. I think Tim Conley helps set a culture. I think that he's great as a scout and identifying talent, and he knows people. He's just, I don't think anybody hates Tim Conley. I think everybody in the world loves Tim Conley. He's just that kind of guy. But you could probably use some guys that are astute at salary cap negotiations. Denver famously offered Kenneth Faried an illegal contract. They gave him too much money. He wasn't even allowed to make that much money. And that is like one of the embarrassing moments. It was the second year, I think, of the Tim Conley era. But it just shows that you could probably use somebody who, they have this in Miami. I can't remember his name. The salary cap. Do you remember his name?
Andy Ellsworth.
There it is. Yeah. So, you know, it's very valuable for a team that has not just a guy who understands the CBA and how it works, but somebody who understands the angles of it. Of like, hey, here's this way we can game this. I think you could use the same thing for a great negotiator. I don't know if Tim Conley's a great negotiator. So you could probably use some people that have some strategists around him that are like, hey, here's how we're going to get the most important thing here. So I do think you probably need those types of minds. But in my experience, I think you just need people that touch every corner of basketball. You need to have great people in Europe that know everyone in Europe. You need to have great people in the Eastern Conference that know everybody up and down the East Coast. I honestly think that's part of the value is Denver has had people that know someone everywhere in the world.
Right. I'm curious what will happen. Again, we don't know that Tim Connelly is with a bullet going to be the Timberwolves' new president of basketball operations. But as you were saying from the Denver perspective, like we're just over a month away from the draft and then free agency. And you're losing your president of basketball operations to make that decision, but you will keep the rest of your staff. And it's the inverse thing here in Minnesota, right? Where if Conley takes over, presumably that will lead to other front office churn because a lot of the guys there were they were Gerson guys. Right. And you know, so there, I mean, Manny Rojan has kind of been the CBA guy here in Minnesota, and he actually goes, he's even before the Tibbs time. So I don't know, is he just a here forever guy? But I, as somebody who would like to see the Wolves draft well and figure out this offseason, I wonder about Tim Connelly coming in here and not really having any of his like surrounding infantry to help him, you know, to help him make these decisions. And how willing will the Timberwolves current Gupta surrounders you know, be able to work in that way, because it's a big offseason for both of these teams, man. Right. Like,
it's,
I don't know what's going to happen.
I would say a couple things. One, I don't think Tim Connelly exactly had an open checkbook to go and build his front office staff here in Denver. So he's well-versed, if whatever the case may be, he's well-versed in how to like find value in that regard. I will say that I do think Tim Connelly was very close to his front office here in Denver, to a lot of the people. I mean, Tommy Balchettis, he goes back 15 years, you know, with him, or 10, 12 years, something like that. Guys that he's known for a long time. So I do expect that'll probably be part of it. I know he has other friends in around the league. So my guess is that's where he's going to go, is again, building that group of people that are, he's comfortable with being around, but also people that are comfortable being honest, not coworkers. You have to get, to make this job, you have to be able to say, hey, I think this is idiotic what you're proposing here. Like, this is dumb. You have to have people that are comfortable enough to do that.
But you have to have people you're comfortable with to be able to do that too. Like, you need to be comfortable to hold them accountable, and there needs to, you kind of have to have at least some sort of relationship to do that. And how could you have that immediately after coming to Minnesota, like next week, if that happens?
Dane, I've heard stories, and these are just stories, of, you know, some of these groups out of Houston years back in the Maury regime and stuff, where front offices had like rules in place. Like, you wouldn't start talking until the meeting officially began. And they had like these weird things about information and how it can't be passed, because they have these protocols. And it was very much a, like, you know, like this rigid thing where we have this system in place, and it's weird. Like, I think Tim Connelly is the exact opposite of that. Like, guys will call each other at 3 a.m, wake them up and say, hey, I had an idea.
Right.
You know, like, there's just no process. It's more of a, hey, we're just a group of guys doing this. So that'll be his MO. I'm curious to see what his staff is. And also, you know, if the fallout of this is Tim is gone, I'm curious how Denver has it. My understanding is that Calvin Booth and Tommy Balchettis, I believe they still have a year on their deals. I think it might even be an option that the team has. Maybe the team elects just to reshuffle the deck. Maybe they go cheap. But the default position on any of this is that they're like, hey, these guys are already under contract. Why spend more money? Let's just run these guys back for a year. But maybe it is a thing where they say, you know what? We believe we can go somewhere else all entirely and start over. And those guys are free, and they just move over.
Well, Adam, thank you for doing this. Have you and Harrison and Brendan like done anything on this? I'm sure you've already recorded an episode. I think people after hearing you talk for 25 minutes here will want to hear you talk more about this. So if they want to listen to you, where can they find that?
The Thursday edition of the DNVR Nuggets podcast, I think, is going to be the most fruitful. We did a Friday one as well, but it is a little bit more casual and cavalier. But the one on Thursday, we went more into all of our perspectives on it and covered a lot of bases from a Denver perspective. But, you know, Tim Connelly was great. I really believe that the Tim Connelly, Chris Finch duo would be really interesting, especially when you talk about, you have some interesting ingredients out there in Minnesota to begin with. Your foundation has some unique pieces, and I just think they're going to find a lot of value to build around them over time. So
actually, we got to hit on the Jokic thing. Like, I don't know why the bad host, like, why would he leave Nikola Jokic? I mean, that's a GM's dream. We got to at least like hit on that part of it. I mean, it's not like you're going to nothing in Cat and Ant, but what do you think that process was for Tim in kind of right giving up the dream situation in terms of what your superstar is like?
There's no question Jokic, Giannis and Curry to me are in their own tier of, if you're a general manager and you have a cornerstone piece, like, what is the best in terms of, it's going to be the easiest to work with, no complaints. They're going to do everything right. They're going to make players better. Those three are in a whole different category. So you're right. Here's the thing. People don't realize this. Up until 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, the Denver Nuggets didn't have a parking garage. Jameer Nelson was here, snowstorm outside after a game, making millions of dollars, and he'd have to put on his heavy coat and his gloves and everything, go scrape ice off of his Mercedes or his whatever it is he's driving. And you just think of this, like, the Kroenkes are cheap. The practice facility they have is smaller than my high school gym's practice facility.
I've been there, yeah.
It's 27 years old or whatever it is. It's terrible. It's so small. that they have to fly to San Diego or Kansas City or somewhere different every year for training camp because they literally can't practice on their own practice facility with everybody when everybody participates. So they're not on television locally because the Cronkies have this stupid blackout deal with Comcast where they're unwilling to pay to get the team on the local cable provider. So people in Denver can't watch.
Even worse than what the Wolves are struggling. I mean, and a lot of people are struggling with Bally. I mean, that's an absolute been a disaster.
And honestly, like, let's be honest here. Minnesota, not exactly the best run organization over the last several years. This is in some ways a battle of who's worse, the Nuggets organization or the Timberwolves. And this is like a first round knockout of the Cronkies here of like, hey, we are the worst. We're by far the worst. So you ask, why would he leave? Like, you're right. He has Jokic. He has a great job. You give copious amount. I don't think he wants to leave. I really don't. But it just shows you how far apart the Minnesota offer is from whatever it is Denver is willing to do. And that's why you do it. But you bring up, it does raise another interesting question, which is when your superstar is Jokic, a front office naturally has an less pressure than if it is maybe a Karl Anthony Towns. Like, Jokic has never once done anything to put Tim Conley in a compromising position.
Right.
Towns, who knows? I mean, I don't know. You know the situation better than me, but is he going to be a guy that talks about moves the front office makes, complains about them, makes passive aggressive comments? Is he a guy that maybe has his one eye out the door and he's waiting to see how things break?
He hasn't been yet to plug that right in. There hasn't been any of that, but right, you know, without being locked up long-term, it's only reasonable to wonder what, I mean, and again, like Giannis, who you just labeled as one of the dream guys, and I agree with that, Giannis leveraged his supermax into the Bucks trading for Drew Holiday. So it's not necessarily the worst idea to be the player. I think about it more through the Ant lens, right? Like if Tim's really going to sign an 8-year contract here, like, I mean, Carl's going to be 27. Like Ant will be Carl's age now by the time Tim Connolly's contract ends, if it's an 8-year deal, you know? So I think that's the, from a personnel standpoint, if I'm Tim, not to diminish Carl, who's a very good player in his own right, but the guy you're building around here, if you take the Timberwolves job, if you're Tim Connolly, is Anthony Edwards.
And Anthony Edwards, I think, so he's from Atlanta. I think him and Tim Connolly are going to get along very, very well. Mm. Tim Connolly is a real one. Like he's very authentic. There's just no BS with him. And I think Anthony Edwards crosses me very much the same. Like, you know, this like disarmingly real guy. And I just think those guys to me are very, 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 very similar personality. And I think that they will get along in that regard.
Awesome. All right, Adam. Well, I appreciate you, me just texting you at 9 a.m. or whatever to say, please come on my podcast. I think the Timberwolves are about to sign Tim Conley. So thanks for doing it. I'm sure we'll talk again, pop on each other's pods as we figure out what the hell's going on here with these teams in the next season. Thank you for doing it. Follow Adam on Twitter at Adam Mahrez. I'm Dane at Dane Moore NBA. I'm sure I will be talking to you all again soon as more stuff keeps happening with the Timberwolves as it always does. Thanks, Adam. Till then, I'm Dane. How I'm feeling, man, I hope it never stop, yeah. Green and hot so you can find me in the crowd, yeah. Don't let standards ever bring you down, yeah. Hope you dancing like nobody else around, yeah.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.